Thank you for visiting HawkeyeJive.com, your stop for Iowa football and men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our ninth edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast exclusively on HawkeyeJive.com. The Iowa Hawkeyes got the type of win that they needed last Saturday against Indiana. Final score from Kinnick Stadium on homecoming, Iowa 145-24. The Hawkeyes are now 5-2 overall, 2-1 in Big Ten play. It was a back and forth game there in the early going. The offense got the production right away. Opening drive, we got a touchdown from Marcus Coker. Indiana started a true freshman, Trey Roberson, at quarterback. He was able to lead the Hoosiers Indiana's first two series of the game. They were able to get touchdowns. The one thing that stood out to me, though, just going back to Iowa's first drive, was the fact that they made it clear from the get-go that they wanted to run the football on the Hoosiers. Indiana came in with the worst rush defense in the conference, and that was Iowa's plan. They wanted to run the ball. They did just that. You know, and Marcus Coker ended up, he had a touchdown on the opening drive. He had two for the afternoon, finished with 139 yards rushing on 23 carries. And it wasn't just him either. They also were able to get both DeAndre Johnson and Jordan Kanziri involved. Kanziri had missed the Northwestern game because of a strained hamstring, but he was back last weekend against Indiana. And again, and DeAndre Johnson being a redshirt freshman, this is one of those things where they wanted to see what they have in him. He went out there. He looked decent. So it's one of those. They definitely want to get those guys the carries, but make no mistake, it is still it's still Marcus as the lead back in the backfield for the Hawkeyes. Obviously, the run game was the key point, but the storyline is in the passing game, and in particular, the performance of Marvin McNutt. He scored three touchdowns. The first one was an 80-yard touchdown reception that set a new school record for career touchdown catches. He surpassed both Tim Dwight and Danon Hughes. With that mark, it's now at 24. And what's even more remarkable is the fact that each of the last three seasons, he's had eight touchdown catches each. And this year, there's still five, possibly six games remaining. So he has a chance to really, you know, end his career on a very high note if he already hasn't, or if he hasn't already. Obviously, becoming Iowa's all-time touchdown leader as far as TD receptions are concerned. That's quite an honor. And it really says a lot about him. And what makes it even more astonishing is just the fact that this is a guy that just 3 years ago was a quarterback. He came in as a quarterback. He made the switch to wide receiver as a redshirt freshman. And it's paid off. It has paid huge dividends for Kirk Ferentz, Ken O'Keefe, and the Iowa offense. James Vandenberg finished 12-16 passing. Had four touchdown passes in the game, actually. He had those three to McNutt. Also had one late in the game to tight end Brad Herman. And I thought it was big for them to get the tight ends involved as well, because they've definitely made strides. Zach Derby had a couple big catches in the game. Herman, I mentioned, had a touchdown catch. CJ Fedorowicz has gotten more involved, especially in the running game as a blocker. To me, that's huge, especially going forward here when Iowa sees higher competition coming at them. Conversely, the defensive side of the ball, there was one storyline there, is the position switch. A.J. Derby, he was a quarterback coming in. He was actually a number two quarterback to James Vandenberg at the beginning of the season. He moved a linebacker on Saturday. Kirk Ferentz talked about it during his press conference Tuesday. A lot of it had to do with just the need at the position, because they've been banged up there this season. It's not as bad as it was last year, but they've been banged up there quite a bit. Tyler Nielsen wasn't able to go last Saturday because of a hand injury. James Morris played, but he then re-aggravated what he said was a high ankle sprain. Anthony Hitchens missed another game with his knee problem. It sounds like he'll be ready to go, but, you know, it's one of those things you got to wait and see. Up front, Thomas Nardo wasn't able to go for the second straight week because of his ankle. Steve Bigak got another start in his place. The defense, they had their struggles against Indiana. They gave up 414 yards of offense. But after those two touchdown drives, they really started to clamp down a bit. And when they got the what was big was they got the stops there in the second quarter that they needed while the offense was continuing its pace. And it really allowed Iowa to, you know, separate themselves from Indiana and make it less of a game than it looked like it was going to be there for a while. So it was a game that Iowa needed to win just for no other reason than the fact that they were just clearly a better team coming in, and they proved that they were a better team. And now they're going to face a similar challenge this week against the Minnesota team that, you know what, Minnesota beat them last year up at TCF Bank Stadium. The final score was 27-24, and it was probably the most embarrassing performance, not just of last season. It was clearly the worst performance they had last season, but it might have been the most embarrassing performance by an Iowa team under Ferentz probably since 2007, that game against Western Michigan. I mean, it was one of those games that Minnesota was 2-9, had nothing to play for other than pride and, you know, trying to retain Florida Rosedale. And they jumped out to a 10-0 lead before Iowa even touched the ball. They scored on their opening drive, attempted an onside kick, recovered it, and then scored again. And it from that point on, it's just like you're sitting there thinking, okay, what's going on here? But now, Iowa did manage to make it a game, and they even had a lead late in that game. It was 24-20, but then the Gophers scored again to take the lead right back, and then there was a key fumble by Marcus Coker, which he was actually asked about on Tuesday. He said that that's been something that's been on the back of his mind all throughout bowl prep, all during the summer, and especially this week. So, you know, Coker, he's been productive the last 2 weeks now. He's gone over 100 yards. He has a chance to redeem himself for what happened at the end of the game last year. This team has a chance to redeem themselves for that performance here on Saturday against the Minnesota team that, again, really not playing for anything more than pride. They're 1-6. Actually, they had the exact same record that Indiana had coming into last week's game. And they're as bad. I can make the argument that they're even worse than Indiana because they really, at least since Big Ten play started, they haven't been in any games at all. I mean, they've lost three games to Michigan, 58-0. They got shellacked at Purdue. And then just last week, Nebraska went up there and handled Minnesota pretty easily. And again, it's battle for Florida Rosedale. It's a game that obviously both fan bases have a heavy interest in. And from Iowa's vantage point, this is a game that they need to be able to win. Because for one thing, it gives them bowl eligibility if they do win, because it would be win number 6. But you look at November, Michigan, 6-1. Michigan State, 6-1. Purdue, 4-3 after they beat Illinois. Nebraska, 6-1. Those are Iowa's four opponents in the month of November. And you're looking at three of those teams are the ones that they're going to be competing with in the Legends division as far as, you know, going out and winning it is concerned. And really, I mean, you look at these last 5 weeks of the season here before the Big Ten championship game, and there's a key game in that division every week. You have this week, you have Michigan State going to Nebraska after coming off that miraculous Hail Mary against Wisconsin at the end of that game. But you have that game. You have Iowa playing Michigan at home. Then they play Michigan State at home. Then Nebraska goes to Ann Arbor on November 19th. And then, of course, regular season concludes with the game day after Thanksgiving between the Hawkeyes and Cornhuskers and Lincoln. So there's going to be key games in the Legends division for each of the next 5 weeks. Something to definitely keep an eye on. We have a good podcast for you here this week. Didn't have any guests, but, well, besides Chris Rowell. Chris will join us here in the next segment. We'll discuss last Saturday's game a little bit more in depth, as well as look ahead more in depth to the Hawkeyes contest this Saturday up in Minnesota against the Golden Gophers. And we'll also give you our picks here for this week's HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em, which, a reminder, if you have not participated in that yet and would like to do so, you have until Friday at 5 p.m. Central to submit your picks to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Just go to HawkeyeDrive.com. You can hover over the page 24 Heisman Road. There's a Pick'em page. Click on that. List of 10 games is there. Make sure to include a score with your Iowa-Minnesota prediction. We'll use that in the event of any ties that may exist this week. So when we come back, Chris Rowell will join me. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brandon Stiles. Once again, pleased to be joined by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell. Chris, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing good. It's an early morning, but I'm ready to go.
I guess I'll just start off by getting your thoughts here on last Saturday's game, in particular with the offense, because first five possessions, all in the first half, every single one of them resulted in a touchdown, and three of them were courtesy of Marvin McNutt. And it just seemed like the offense basically carried the game for Iowa on Saturday and, you know, did what it needed to do from the get-go against a team like Indiana.
Yeah, well, it was kind of weird and ironic that I actually went to the game this past weekend and ended up coming in at the best time of the day, actually. I was walking actually down to my seats over there under the field goal post in the far end, and I actually seen when the play action that happened and Marvin caught the ball and actually went to a touchdown. But I really felt that that's what the guys needed to do. When you have a couple teams here lined up to put you in a good position where you will be playing Michigan next week after this week, you have to beat the teams that are down and teams that you need to beat. But other than that, I mean, the offense looked great. James was able to do everything he needed to do. Marcus had made a big compliment. Marvin came back alive here, and everybody else had did what they needed to do.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention there the three touchdowns by Marvin in the first half set a new school record. He now has 24 career touchdown catches. Actually, I saw this stat a few days ago. I can't remember where it was, but he's had 8 touchdown receptions each of the last 3 years. The only other receiver in the country to do that's Ryan Broyles from Oklahoma.
That's impressive when you sit here and put Marvin in the same category as Ryan Broyles, because Ryan Broyles has been outstanding throughout his career here at OU. And with Marvin being able to put up 8 touchdowns a year the last 3 years, that's remarkable. And I look at, if you sit here and stack Marvin with the other receivers in the nation, you would sit there and be like, okay, that's just pretty legit here, man, when you got a guy that caught up pretty fast with the other guys.
The one thing, too, that I think really stands out with the offense, they talked a lot about being balanced. The play calling wasn't necessarily balanced because they ran the ball 42 times and they only had to throw 16, but they were able to be really effective doing both. Marcus Coker had another game of 100 yards plus rushing. That was his second straight. And they were able to get both Jordan Kanziri and DeAndre Johnson going there. And I guess finding the depth at running back, how important do you see that being now, especially as they enter, maybe not so much this week, but entering that deep stretch there in November where they're going to be playing some really high-quality competition in the conference?
When we talk about balance, so I'm sure that for the most part, more than half of the bulk of the carries were more likely in the second half when we were trying to sit here and fill out the running backs or whatnot and get them some experience. Throughout the year, I know we've seen that the running backs had been getting action here and there. You know, I don't know how many running backs, is like 4, 5, 6 or something like that. But the balance, you know, we can either run the ball, we can pass the ball. But, you know, the good thing is that if the run gets shut down, we have a chance and we have some legit receivers out there to make some plays. So with the balance and everything, you have the younger guys going in and filling a role. But we can call upon any one of those guys. I know Kanziri came in and made a couple plays, and DeAndre Johnson, which I was happy about, a kid that tore his ACL or whatnot and made a big bounce back here, and I was happy to see him out there, actually, because he haven't really played, I don't think, yet
I think last week. A little bit against Northwestern, but that was really like his first significant – last week was his first significant action.
Right.
And the other name, too, I should have also mentioned, he didn't play in the game, but Mikhail McCall. He injured his ankle, as you recall, in the opener against Tennessee Tech. He was in uniform last week. A lot of people were thinking that he'd probably be done for the season, but
he was back, there might be a chance that he travels with the team here to Minnesota Saturday, and who knows, we very well could be seeing him back on the field. What would that do for this offense?
I would think it'd give it a spark. You know, just add on to what we already have. It's always good to have some dead. I'm sure you know that with running backs. It's one of those deals where the tight ends did come along last week. Not too many catches, but our tight ends is going to be our key to our team this year. Because down the line, you know, it's going to get cold and James is going to get blitzed here and there, and the running backs may not want to run the ball, but so much just because they're getting tackled every play. And when they get cold, tackles does not feel so good being an offensive player. So I think our tight ends is our key. And I know we haven't talked about our tight ends lately, but our tight ends will be able to sit here and I'm like, hey, eyes is on us now.
I should mention, too, all three of them have been involved, especially last week. I know Derby started, he caught a couple passes. Also had Brad Herman catching a touchdown late in the game. CJ's been out there a lot more, especially on running plays, but blocking. Switching over here, defensive side of the ball. They did well in the red zone, and they've been well in the red zone all year. But once again, Indiana found a way to get 400 yards of offense on them, and they picked up, I believe, 24 first downs. What are some of your concerns right now that you see with this defense now that we're more than halfway through the season with this team?
Well, I see what the concerns are. I've seen Sean play a little off. I think it just goes from the DBs, the linebackers, and the D-line. Is it the play calling? Never know. Is it the actual players, the way they play? Is it the style that the team that you play against, you know? With Indiana's offense, coming from Oklahoma, the coach coming from Oklahoma, they pretty much – they're running on somewhat of a no huddle with the type of guys they have. The quarterback was pretty much running at will. And when you get the quarterback running, when he's running at will, it pretty much screws up a defense, especially if you're set for a guy that's going to sit here and pass and run. But when you're able to establish something like the quarterback did with the run, it's kind of like, okay, what play is coming next? So they pretty much had the Hawks on their heels, and like you said, the Hawks came through when it really mattered, when it came to the defensive red zone or whatnot. But the concerns right now is just trying to get consistency and stopping teams from sitting here and making long drives, and I think that's the biggest deal with the Hawks. They need to stop these long drives, get some teams into three and outs, or either, you know, a couple extra plays outside of the three and outs. Is that we need to control the offensive line that we play against, and I think that's the biggest key. The guys, they're doing what they can, and one thing I was going to say, another bright spot that we've seen this week on the defense side, and I'm not sure if you had this in mind, was B.J. Lard. B.J. Lard came in and played a couple plays, and it was a confidence booster, and I was telling Brad Banks when I was sitting next to him during the game, I said, hey, man, I don't know if Sean's hurt or not, or whatnot, or either coach is just sitting here taking Sean out, but we've seen that B.J. Lard, they were going after B.J. here a lot, and I mean, the more and more reps he had and the quarterbacks picking on him, he was gaining confidence towards the end of the game.
Well, we never, and I should clear up too, we never got an actual answer from Coach Ferentz on this, but what I believe happened was because Prater was called for a personal foul down near the goal line, and it was kind of a questionable call because it looked like they said he hit him high with his helmet. It didn't really look like that. It looked like his shoulder. But I think because it was his second personal foul in the game, I think it was one of those things where they just wanted to take him out, cool him off a bit, because he did come back in. The other storyline, besides obviously Marvin's record-setting day, was A.J. Derby. He was a quarterback. He came in as a quarterback, redshirted last year. He was the number two quarterback at one point this season. He actually even got snaps in late situations against teams like Tennessee Tech, Louisiana Monroe. He comes back from his two-game suspension, and he switches over to linebacker. Not only that, but he's out there on special teams. Very first play, he's out there on kickoff coverage. He's recording a tackle. Just, what are your thoughts in general on his position switch, and what type of impact could that have on not just on him but also on the team going forward?
Just from high school, just watching this kid, and a lot of people say, hey, this guy can play – pretty much any position. It's impressive, you know. You got a guy with pretty much a pro-style body. I'm sure it's like people sit there and lick their fingers for a kid like him. A guy can play quarterback. A guy can play tight end, linebacker, safety, whatever you need him to actually play. I thought it was great when I actually seen him make an impact out there. He's a kid that pretty much any coach would like to sit here and be like, hey, coach, I'll do whatever it is for the team. I know there's a lot of injuries at the linebacker position, and also with the quarterbacks, I was like, what was going on when he was actually out there on special teams? I'm like, all right, your second string quarterback out there on special teams is kind of weird. But, I mean, for coach to actually switch his position, if it's one of those deals like, okay, that's he's going to be on the defensive side, it's one of those deals where, like, he's going to play, and that's one thing we're going to see, that he's going to play, and coach got a lot of confidence in John Winkie to be number two, and the freshman that's redshirting this year. So, I mean, Coach Ferentz feel good about that decision that he made, and hopefully we'll see something. There's going to be more questions about the backup quarterback spot, but we'll see.
Now, looking ahead to Saturday's game against Minnesota, I know you were not on the team last year, so you were not a part of it, but last season, they went up to Minneapolis, and for lack of a better phrase here, they laid an egg against a Minnesota team that was 2-9 going in and really playing for nothing other than pride. Florida Rosedale's currently residing up there. Just how much more difficult is it to – I know any loss is going to be difficult, but when you lose to a rival like that, especially one that – I mean, it's not like they have a whole lot to play for other than the fact that, hey, it's just beating your rival. You know, it's not like they had a bowl berth on the line. It's not like the Big Ten title was on the line. They were just simply playing for pride, and it was one of those deals where Iowa just – and Ferentz even said they didn't look like they were paying attention to anything going on and just seemed disinterested.
I was getting ready to say, with that game, just going off of just pretty much having these guys scoreless for so many quarters, and you go out there, and I know it was cold and it was freezing and the snow was on the ground and everything. And, you know, sometimes, you know, the weather condition plays a role into a player's psyche or whatnot, but then at the same time, it's no reason for you to just go and lay an egg. It wasn't like Minnesota just gave it to him. It was one of those deals where you just sat there and just was miserable four quarters throughout a game. There's no excuses, especially for a team that's supposed to have been competing for a Big Ten championship, not to say a national championship last year, and just pretty much in their career somewhere like that, you know, in a beautiful new stadium at the time. It's one of those deals I was just, like, speechless and just kind of felt down after that game. And it was the last game that you were – pretty much see the Hawks play for about a month, and it was one of those just you shake your head and just try to figure out what went wrong and what was going on. But it, like you say, it's a lot of pride, you know, when you sit there and have no trophies in a trophy case at all outside of what you got from the past bowl games, and it humbles you a lot, you know, and especially with a team like Minnesota, you sit there and like, how we lose to this team last year. But this week, this Saturday, we're going to see some Hawks go out there and play, especially get revenge and payback to those guys, and they should be able to take care of business. It's just one of those deals where, like you say, you just lose focus, and that was one of those type of games.
One thing I want to ask you about, just kind of going on this note here with the psyche of the team, if you will, during the course of that game. Sean Prater made an interesting comment to me on Tuesday. He brought up how he felt that a responsibility of, like, trying to keep the guys amped up on the sidelines when he wasn't out there and trying to keep them interested in the game. And he mentioned how last year Durrell had that kickoff return for a touchdown. And it seemed like only like a couple of guys were on the sidelines jumping up and down. It didn't seem like everybody was just, you know, in the spirit of, okay, he's going all the way for a touchdown, and they're right back in this game. How much importance do you see in that? And, you know, having guys that are on the sidelines when they're not out there on the field, just trying to keep everybody encouraged, trying to keep them upbeat and not allow something like that to happen?
Well, I think it's very important, you know, when you got a guy that's not suited up and just sitting there cheering on a team, it can it can go both ways. You know, the player can either be cheering for the team if he, like a Sean Prater was, or the guy can just be there just for the road trip and be miserable in the weather conditions. And, you know, with a guy like Sean Prater, a leader this year, I would say, and I, you know, I'm proud of him to be a leader, to be able to take that role. It was like you say, if you don't have anyone excited, what was going on in their mind if he wasn't excited and saying, hey, we back into this game, you know? They were pretty much in the game to the end of the game. It was just one of those, you just say, man, where are these guys buying at? Hey, do they want to go back home and get ready for Thanksgiving, or what is it? You just never know what was going on at the time.
One thing that I know played a big role last year, and I mentioned DJ K's kickoff return, but Minnesota in that game, they ran an onside kick after going down the field on its opening drive and scoring. Recovered the onside kick, scored again, and it was 10-0 before Iowa even touched the football. How important a role can special teams play, especially in a game like this where, again, it's almost a similar scenario in the sense that Minnesota is a very down team, probably the worst team in the Big Ten, yet they're going to be, again, playing for the same things are going to be at stake. Pride, and in their case now, wanting to keep that trophy on their sidelines and not let Iowa take it back.
I was going to say, when it comes down to, you know, games like that, and if you realize, there's one thing that a lot of coaches been getting off on Coach Ferentz, and I know you probably realize this, is trick plays and special team plays. And, I mean, that's one thing that Coach Ferentz seemed to get outsmarted on, and it's just one of those deals you scratch your head and be like, oh, gosh, you're right. Is Coach Ferentz sleeping? Is the team sleeping? Are they aware? What is going on with the guys? But it's just one of those deals. Special teams play a big role in any game. And I was watching – I know, just not to go off sidetrack, but I was watching the LSU and the Auburn game. The guy that went out and made those two tackles and smashed the guy from Auburn was a receiver. And, I mean, like, defensive players love that. And they get amped and sit here and be like, all right, everybody's going now. And special teams is a huge, huge factor into every game. No matter when and what time it is, special teams always have a huge role, just like an offense and defense.
My last question here before we get into the pick'em. When you go into a game like this, in Iowa's case here, they're 5-2. They win this week against a bad Minnesota team. They get 6 wins. They're going to go to a bowl game. Like, no matter what, even if they lose out, they're still going to end up in a bowl game. Is that something that ever gets brought up during the week? Like, when you're sitting at 5 wins and you know, okay, one more, and whatever happens the rest of the way, you know that there's going to be that 13th game, that postseason game, that bowl trip that the players and coaches and everybody just looks forward to?
I was going to say, I know some people always ask us, what do coach emphasizes throughout the week? You know, it's always one game. It's always one game. It's always one game, week by week. And then you get to that fifth win. You get to that fifth win. It's hard to get that sixth win to get bowl eligible, believe it or not. It's one of those deals where, like, coach say, hey, get win number 6. And once coach says get win number 6, all right, it's not for sure. I mean, as we've seen a couple years back, one of my year that we didn't go to a bowl game, which we didn't deserve to go to a bowl game, where you get win number 6, you get that extra game, like you say. Is it guaranteed? Maybe, maybe not. It's just one of those deals where, like, once you get bowl eligible, you know, you feel good about yourself, and now you got to keep moving on. It's not always, all right, we get 6 wins, we get to go to another game. It's teams that are left out, you know. But it's a lot at stake, you know. And, yes, it is one of those games right here, trying to get number 6 against a very dangerous team. And I tell you that Minnesota is a very dangerous team, just because, you know, it's a team that's down, and they know how to survive, and they can pretty much do anything to stop you from getting where you need to get to.
All right, you ready for this week's pick'em?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And just a reminder, for those of you who want to participate, you can go to HawkeyeDrive.com, hover over the page 24 Heisman Road, you'll see the pick'em page, click on that, list of 10 games, submit your picks at HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score with your Iowa-Minnesota prediction. We'll use that in the event of any ties. Congratulations to our winner from this past week, Tim Carty of Iowa City. Tim, congrats. He's a second-time winner this year. And we will start in the Big Ten with a pretty big game here. Michigan State who you correctly picked to beat Wisconsin, and they did because of a Hail Mary that I do believe was the right call there at the end. Keith Nichol, I thought, definitely broke the plane. But now they got to go on the road to face a Nebraska team that is coming off a pretty dominating effort against Minnesota. And, you know, Lincoln is just one of those tough environments. This is a big game in the Legends division, and this is the division Iowa's in. How do you see this one playing out?
I was going to say, one thing that you probably realize that I always put down and always put in a very huge thought, and I guess just because of the type of guy I've been growing up, and I always played defense and special teams. Defense and special teams played a big role in every game that I sit here and pick, and I mean, no matter what the offense, you never know if the offense show up or not. And I know I sent the text to you talking about the game. I said, hey, if I wouldn't have picked Michigan State if Golson was out, you know, and I was thinking Golson would have a huge impact upon the pass rush and pretty much interfere with the pass time and whatnot with Wisconsin. But I just knew it was the right place and the right time for a game like that. And if you think about it, it's the right setup. When you sit here and you think it's a night game and the crowd is always there for you. But moving into this week's game, I think it's a big letdown. I think Nebraska, like you say, Nebraska's you know, Big Red. They're going to show up because Nebraska feels like, okay, Michigan State is on an all-time high right now. It's time to sit here and knock them off the throne and take over the lead of the Legends division. And just not just because Nebraska's at home, I really feel that Nebraska is a team that's been went under the radar just because they got whooped on by Wisconsin. Now it's their time to sit here and be like, okay, we're a legit team. We got ourselves together. It's time to go.
I've been really going back and forth on this game. I agree that I sense a little bit of a letdown here at Michigan State. I think it might actually benefit. I don't know if you agree with this or not, but I actually think it might be to their benefit that this is an early kickoff after that game last weekend, as opposed to playing another night game or a later afternoon game in Lincoln. An interesting stat that I heard, Michigan State has never in their program's history ever won three straight games against top 25 teams. And they would be doing that if they were to win in Lincoln this Saturday. That being said, I'm going to agree with you here. And I do think Nebraska is going to get it done. I just think it's one of those things. If Michigan State does bounce back, that's, you know, that says a lot about their program. And it really sets up nicely for them going forward. But I just think Nebraska's going to make it somewhat interesting here. And the fact that they're at home, the fact that it is one of those games where, you know, they're feeling good about themselves, like you said, I think they're just going to find a way to keep it going, and I think Rex Burkhead will come up big.
I was going to say one last thing about this game is that, like you say, this would be very impressive if they went on a roll. That's the biggest thing. It would be very impressive for teams to sit here and be like, all right, Michigan State is serious, and they beat two legit teams, even though, like I said, Nebraska has just been sitting there under the radar since the beatdown of Wisconsin.
Moving along here to the game that used to be called the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. The two school presidents of Florida and Georgia didn't want that nickname anymore around its game. But nevertheless, Georgia and Florida are meeting again this week in Jacksonville like they do every year. Georgia has won five straight. They're ranked 22nd in the country now. Florida has lost three in a row. Both teams are coming off byes. Florida has dominated this series in recent years. I believe they've won 18 of the last 21 against Georgia. But with that being said, I feel this is a time that Georgia is going to win, and I really feel they're in a position where they're just waiting for South Carolina to slip up, and once they do, that division is theirs to lose. And I think Georgia realizes that. I think they realize the importance of winning this game against Florida and the impact that it would have on them going forward in the conference. And I see the Bulldogs prevailing.
I'm going to agree with you with this one. Like you said, it can be one of those games where you sit here and be like, Florida, they dominated. But you got a Georgia team that's starting to roll with some steam, and they got some steam right behind them. Five games compared to three games a team lose. It's one of those deals that can go – things can change. And we know things can change. But I think – and I know that Georgia's on the right track. You know, if they beat Boise State, we're talking about Georgia making a lot of noise here. Mm-hmm. Just the same thing with Florida. If they win one out of those three tough games, or two, even two, we're talking about Florida's a pretty tough team with a young team and without their quarterback. So, but they get their quarterback back, and I can see that be a huge impact. But like you say, Georgia's been under the radar just like Nebraska has been, and it's just one of those deals where Georgia be able to take care of business this week. But one last thing I was going to say is this is actually one of the tougher weeks, period, for me to pick, just because this can be a big letdown week for me, or just some teams that are undefeated or some teams that are in very good position for championships and their perspective conferences or whatnot. It's just one of those deals. You can go either way with some of these games.
Speaking of letdowns, our next game features Oklahoma, who's coming off a pretty bad loss to Texas Tech last week. I mean, they ended up only losing the game by three. They made it interesting there in the second half, but they were down 31-7 at one point in that game, and I don't know how much of it was a rain delay, or the lightning delay, I should say, that pushed the kickoff back an hour and a half or what it was, but they just came out flat and were never able to fully recover. So they lost their first game of the year. They're pretty much, for all intents and purposes, out of the national championship picture. Now they're going on the road to face a Kansas State team that is undefeated, that is ranked in the top 10. And, I mean, the thing that's been impressive about them this season is they've found ways to win close games. I believe five of their wins have been by a touchdown or less. I know they recently beat Texas Tech in a very close game down in Lubbock. But I have a hard time picturing Oklahoma losing two in a row. And as good as Kansas State's defense has been, I think this is one of those games where Oklahoma's going to come out with a chip on its shoulder. And I think they're going to score a lot. And I expect Oklahoma to get out of there with a victory.
Well, I guess we agree again. It's just one of those deals. I sat there and thought about it a little bit more. Texas Tech's one of those teams that they're going to score with you throughout the game. Their defense is never really the best defense, but they sit there and if they need a hold, they try their best, you know, to hold whatever they can, because their offense is pretty dynamite and it has been over the years, especially with Mike Leach and Tommy taking over. Now, it's one of those deals. He wanted to be able to still put in a run, but also a pass. And we've seen that Texas Tech could have pretty much committed suicide themselves by, you know, gambling also with the game. And Oklahoma just couldn't sit there and take advantage of what was going on. So, but Oklahoma, this should not be a letdown. It's one of those deals where, you know, you got to – all respect is due to Kansas State, but more people are going to be looking towards Oklahoma to come back and come back at will.
And we're going to find out a lot about Kansas State here, because after they play Oklahoma this week, their next three games consist of at Oklahoma State, Texas A&M at home, and then at Texas. So that's a tough stretch ahead for Bill Snyder and his team. Staying in the Big 12 here, Oklahoma State's now ranked third in the country after beating Missouri pretty decisively up in Columbia. They're playing host to Robert Griffin III and Baylor Bears, who are coming off a bye week after losing pretty badly to A&M. This is one of those games, again, I've been on the Oklahoma State bandwagon here, if you will, for the entire season. I'm not going to get off just yet here. I think they get it done at home. I think Robert Griffin III will have a solid game for Baylor, but I just see Oklahoma State being too much, especially at home.
I think this game can go either way with Robert Griffin, you know, if he has a monster game or just a terrible game. It's one of the two that's going to happen. And I've seen his stats, 22 touchdowns to two interceptions. That's impressive with the kid. But it's like you say, it's not enough Robert Griffins on the field for them to actually win a game. But at the same time, if Baylor can sit there and be able to hold Oklahoma State defense, which no one has been able to this year, really, you would think that a team like Arizona going into the year be able to sit there and be able to hold them down and, you know, make it interesting because of their offense was pretty decent there themselves. But it's too much Oklahoma State when it's at the end of the day.
Moving along, going back into the Big Ten here, Penn State is coming off a win at Northwestern. They're now 7-1, and they're 4-0 in the Big Ten. Penn State, Michigan State are the only undefeated teams in the conference. They're playing host to Illinois on Saturday, who they're on a two-game losing streak. The Ohio State loss, I get, even though it was at home, I get that because Ohio State's always been a dominant program. But last week, they – for all. I mean, they look bad against Purdue. They only lost by 7 points, but it was 21-0 in the fourth quarter in that game. Big letdown for the Illini. Now they got to go into Beaver Stadium to play a team that they did beat by 20 points last year. But factoring that in, I just see Penn State getting its revenge here. I can't see them losing at home 2 years in a row to Illinois. And I don't see how Illinois is really going to recover after losing a game like that to Purdue. I just think this is definitely the track that Penn State, I felt, could go on if they beat Iowa at the beginning of the year. I said that that would be the key. They did that, and now they're sitting here with a chance to move to 5-0 in the Big Ten and really put even more pressure on both Ohio State and Wisconsin and any other team in that division. I like Penn State at home.
Yeah, a lot of people sat there and wrote off Penn State, and people say, hey, Penn State is not as good as team as what their record is. And I to this day, I say, hey, Penn State defense is not ranked like this for no reason. Penn State is not playing like this for no reason, you know. Like we both know, and everybody knows in the country, that they only lost to one team, and that's the number one team in the country, I would arguably say, with anyone, to Alabama. But Penn State, you know, is just one of those teams, you know, just trying to get themselves back established and back to the program that they were, and when Mike Robertson was there. And it's just one of those deals where, like you say, Penn State just can't get another letdown here. Penn State, I think they're too good. Their running back is dargone good. Their quarterback situation just need to
figured it out, I think.
They just really need to come on, man. But it's just one of those deals where Penn State, too much Penn State, especially being at home. Like you say, Illinois just they laid an egg last week, and it's not that Purdue brought it to them and not bring it to them, but they brought it to them, and you know, they played well. Purdue played a good game, and Illinois just didn't know how to respond to a team that pretty much shocked them, and I'm sure they shocked them. And I would say that Purdue also shocked Illinois last week too, but at the same time, Purdue is a Division I team, and the kids were Division I kids that get scholarships just like them.
Going into the Big East here, a couple teams that lost on Friday night. West Virginia lost a game we mentioned in our pick'em last week at Syracuse. Actually got blasted in that game. They're now going on the road to face a Rutgers team that's coming off a pretty tough loss at Louisville. Both teams are still in the hunt there in the Big East. And actually, everybody, it seems like, is in the hunt in the Big East there. Cincinnati's 2-0 in the conference, but it's a complete mess right now. Both these teams still play Cincinnati later in the year, but as far as this game goes, both teams coming off losses. West Virginia is still in the top 25. They're ranked 25th. Rutgers is 5-2 as well. How do you see this one playing out? I know, obviously, your brother plays for West Virginia, but, I mean, that aside, how do you see this playing out?
Like I told you all season long, the biggest problem with West Virginia, they cannot score early. And another problem that West Virginia has, they can't score touchdowns in the red zone. And when you can't do that, you with an offense like they have and don't have no kind of goal line offense, you can't win. Syracuse brought it to them. Hats off to Syracuse this past week. And it was that Syracuse pretty much scored on the same play three times. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy was open every play. It wasn't like he made tough catches. He was open. And, like, West Virginia defense need to step up. Their offense need to score touchdowns. And you can't sit there and rely on your offense to do something when they can't even score inside the 20. And now we see that their biggest plays are pretty much big plays. You sit here in 30, 40-yard touchdowns, you know, special teams. But if West Virginia can't sit here and find some kind of identity, sitting here saying, hey, we need to find some kind of way to punch this ball in, they would never be in the game. Any team that sit there and jump on West Virginia always have a chance because they know that West Virginia is going to go out there and just sling the ball left and right. And not to say that Geno Smith had a huge game and they had West Virginia's offense on the sideline. Anytime you have a team like West Virginia on the sideline, you get the quarterback frustrated and get them out of rhythm. And that's what happened with Syracuse. And they just brought it, and they brought the blitz, seemed like, every play.
But now how do you see this game playing out here against Rutgers?
And one thing, I sat there and watched the Rutgers game also because I was frustrated with the West Virginia game. Rutgers played played very well. Played very well, and they at home, and I'm sure they come back and come back home and sit there and play hard for the home crowd. I see West Virginia winning the game just because they should be an upset team and sitting here saying, "Hey, we pretty much let ourselves down or whatnot." But I'm going West Virginia this week.
I agree. I think West Virginia will win. I actually think this is one of those games where it might benefit them that they're playing this game on the road as opposed to playing at home, just because it gives Daniel Holgorsen a chance to, okay, figure out what didn't work against Syracuse last week with, you know, the things that you do with your routine for road games leading up, and now correcting those things and getting a chance to correct those things right away. I think winning this game would go a long way for them. And Rutgers, they have the win at Syracuse this year in overtime, but I haven't really been all that impressed by them. And I think that they're going to have a little bit of a hard time coming off that loss to Louisville, so I see the Mountaineers winning. The ACC 2 weeks ago, this looked like a great game between Clemson and Georgia Tech. It still looks like it'll be a good game, but Clemson comes in. They've held up their end of the bargain. They're 8-0, ranked 6th in the country. But they're going to Atlanta to play a Georgia Tech team that has lost 2 straight to Virginia and Miami. Granted, both of those games are on the road, but it just seems like they haven't been able to get their offense going here. They've had a hard time running the football both games. And Clemson, again, it's one of those things that until I see them lose, it's hard to pick against them at this point. And even though this game is in Atlanta, and I think Georgia Tech, you know, will be able to, I don't want to say bounce back, but I think they'll be able to get a few things going early on. I just see this game being too much Clemson in the end, so I'm going to go with the Tigers.
I was going to say this game pretty much gave me flashbacks to the championship game they had 2 years ago in 2009. I was sitting here just, come on, Clemson, come on, Clemson. I want to play Clemson. Well, I was like, at the time, I was like, I didn't know if we were going to Orange Bowl or not. But it was one of those deals where what an offense like Georgia Tech, and especially them being at home, they always have a chance. And if – it's just one of those deals where you sit there and you look at Clemson, and I seen an interview with their coach say, hey, we're going to party every time we win. And I think maybe that party might come to an end. And but at the same time, you know, Clemson's just running at will. They're on an all-time high. The quarterback is playing phenomenal. They got a phenomenal freshman receiver. Mm-hmm. Like you say, I just don't see them losing this week. But Georgia Tech will play a tough one. They're going to fight as much as they can to stay away from losing 3 straight games.
Going back into the Big Ten here, Wisconsin coming off that heartbreaking loss at Michigan State. They fell to 12th in the country. Now they got to go into the horseshoe to play Ohio State in a primetime game. Buckeyes are coming off a bye after beating Illinois a couple weeks ago in Champaign. I'll let you start here. How do you see this one going?
Just like I told you all season long, I know a lot of people say, hey, this is a homer because this guy is from Ohio, just like a West Virginia pick, you know, and an Iowa pick. People's like, oh, those homers. But you know what? It's actually not. You know, Ohio State just got a lot of stuff going on at the time. And I feel that with this pick, I'm going to pick Wisconsin. But you know what? Ohio State is a very, very dangerous team. I will never be shocked that they won't win this game, because pretty much tables can be turned. Even though Wisconsin is not the number one team in the country, but Ohio State is a very, very dangerous team. If they win this game, you're talking about a lot of steam can go ahead with taking from this game, and Ohio State can pretty much win out, and a lot of people sit there and be shocked. And if Ohio State win this game, man, it's a lot of people going to sit there and be like, all right, Finkel won another big game. What do we do? I still think he's out, but Ohio State, you know, too much Wisconsin after letting them let down last week.
Here's my upset pick. I think Ohio State does prevail on Saturday, and I'm going to tell you why. The reason I like the Buckeyes, first of all, from their standpoint, I think the bye came at the right time for them. Because even though they were coming off a win, that game they ran the ball 51 times and only threw 4 passes. What I feel they probably were able to do during this week off, or I shouldn't say week off, but during this week where, you know, they could just focus on themselves, is they could work on their passing game and get more, allow Miller to establish more of a rapport with his receivers, with Stoneburner, a tight end. And I think with this game being at home, you're gonna, they're gonna, he's gonna feel more comfortable when he is in a passing situation. And against a team like Wisconsin, you got to have balance on offense, as Michigan State showed last weekend, in order to beat the Badgers. Combine that too with the fact that Wisconsin, I don't know how. I mentioned how I thought Michigan State might have a letdown. I think this could be a letdown for Wisconsin in the sense that, okay, their thoughts of possibly playing for a national championship are pretty much gone. And they got to go back on the road for a second straight week, another hostile environment. It's another night game. And Ohio State is going to be out for blood after what happened in Madison last year. The Buckeyes were ranked number one in the country, and Wisconsin curb stomped them. And you have to wonder now, okay, which Wisconsin team are we going to see? Are we going to see the team that looked dominant in the early part of the season? Or are we going to see a team that, you know, suddenly got complacent after going up 14-0 on Michigan State and allowed the Spartans to basically dominate that game up until late in the fourth quarter? And I just feel like it's one of those games that everything seems to – all the intangibles seem to be with Ohio State, and I just think the Buckeyes are going to get this done, and I think it's going to make that division even more interesting here going into the final month.
I was going to say, with the two teams playing last week, Michigan State and Wisconsin, one of those teams is going to end up being just like Iowa. One of those teams is going to turn into Iowa if they lose this week. That free fall where it's just – you just see just a snowball effect happen. And between the two teams, it more likely be Michigan State. But then if we see Wisconsin do this, like you say, you go from a national championship and you know you're right there in the picture to like, oh, here we go, you know. And you're sitting there just trying to get back on pace and you got to go to Ohio State. You don't have enough time. You don't have enough time to sit there and get prepared for something like this. And just Wisconsin need to go out there and just play a strong performance. And you don't have to go for the kill. If they go for the kill and they miss, it can be a miserable miss and the seniors will know, hey, we need to get this team back.
And they're going to also be going up against an Ohio State defense that's, unlike Michigan State, is going to be at full strength because they don't have any injuries or any, you know, suspensions to deal with on that side of the ball. And I just think that things seem to work with Ohio State as long as they don't allow Wisconsin to just dominate them from the start, like you said. I think the Buckeyes are going to pull this one off. Now going into Pac-12 here, big game in that conference. Stanford looked very impressive last weekend against Washington, putting up 65 points on the Huskies. They're going down to L.A. to take on USC, who's coming off, and you called it, a very impressive victory at Notre Dame. Battle of two, probably the two first two quarterbacks that are going to be taken in next year's draft, assuming they both come out, Andrew Luck and Matt Barkley. The end of the day, I'm going to pick Stanford to win this game because even though it's at USC, Stanford's defense is going to be the difference. I just think they're slightly better than USC's defense. I think the offenses could be pretty close to even, but I think Stanford is the right recipe here for going into an environment like USC and winning, which is playing good defense and being able to run the ball like they did last weekend. And that's going to take a lot of pressure off Andrew Luck and not make it a situation where he feels he has to put the team on his shoulders and win. And at the end of the day, I just think that that's going to end up being the difference, and I like the Cardinal.
In the words of Lee Corso, not so fast, my friend. I really feel that USC has this game, and the reason why is I feel if Mark Tyler is able to go out there and play, hopefully he will be able to get it a go. Woods, you got Barkley. USC is a better team than pretty much every team that Stanford played this year. It's in the Coliseum. The guys are hype. Like we say, every big game that USC has, it's their Super Bowl. You know, it's just one of those deals. They got a lot of pride to play in, and it's a lot actually. You know, this season is prepping them for next year. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a very good year and you got some young guys that's coming back, you know, hopefully, you know, it's kind of hard to say that Barkley would come back. You know, he's going to be a top pick, but it's just one of those deals. You can hit a snowball effect and people say, all right, the Trojans had their 2 years in jail, now it's time for them to get out, and that's the Trojan team that we're used to seeing playing, a pretty dominant team. No, they're not the Trojans of the past, but this team will be feeling good about themselves going into the offseason, especially with a good year, and then sitting there to be able to say, we beat Andrew Luck and the Stanford Cardinals. But let's not sit there and just blow a lot of crap up USC into USC. Stanford's a really good team. And like you say, I mean, they're losing. They lost their best player on defense, and they're still playing at a high level in the way that they played last week and just dethroned Washington. I said, man, oh, man, this is a really tough team. You know, that's one of those teams. Stanford's one of those teams I don't have as much respect because they haven't played anyone this year. And we'll find out this week. But I really feel that Andrew Luck is going to get his way. But the wild card is going to be USC's offense. Will they be able to play tough against Stanford's defense? And I'm starting to buy into Stanford's defense.
So you're picking USC to win?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I just want to say, too, I think USC is going to make this a very interesting game. Because like you said, up until last week, I didn't think Stanford really played anyone either. But I thought last weekend against the top 25 team, that was a very impressive win, albeit at home. The running game was very productive for the Cardinal. And I just see that continuing on and leading into a very big game a couple weeks from now against Oregon. Now, finally, Iowa is going back up for the second year in a row to Minnesota to take on the Golden Gophers. Again, Iowa's 5-2, overall 2-1 in the Big Ten. A win on Saturday, get some 6 wins, make some bowl eligible. Minnesota's 1-6, has been winless in the Big Ten so far, 0-3. 2:30 kickoff up in Minneapolis. Games on the Big Ten Network. How do you see this one shaking out, and what are the things that you're going
to
be looking for?
I'll say the key to the game now is starting off fast, you know, and finishing off great. That's one of the biggest things with Iowa this week. You know, if they're able to sit there and go and give it to Minnesota lay down. As we know in the past, Minnesota lay down against any team once you punch them in the mouth. Well, what we need to do is what we know is that they have a dynamite quarterback, and he has been all his career. Injury's been pretty much sitting them out here all year long, pretty much with Marquise Gray. But now he's the featured quarterback, and now a lot of people have a lot of tape on him, and they know what type of guy he is. And then they had that true freshman quarterback, where you know, just the guy get, you know, he gets in a period where he's a deer in the headlights or whatnot. But I think it's too much Iowa. That defense is going to play a little tougher. I really feel that the defense will play a lot tougher this week. It's more of an offense that they're used to seeing on a regular day basis, a type of spread offense where you don't see much mobileness into the quarterback, especially Marquise Gray just coming back from his injury. But too much Iowa. Go Hawks.
I'll say Iowa wins 38-16. I know the defense is struggling. They've given up a lot of points, but just given some of that ineptitude at Minnesota, I don't think they're going to quite get the 20 points. But I will say, I think this is a week, though, that the defense does have to come out with a strong showing, because Minnesota has been the worst team in the Big Ten this year as far as being able to pick up third downs. And I believe have the fewest first downs of any team in the conference. It's one of those situations where, as you were saying before, getting those three and outs, getting off the field, not having those long drives take place on you, I think that's going to be critical. And if that can happen, I think Iowa's offense has a chance to really light up the scoreboard here. I think this team is going to be very determined after what happened last season. I think they're going to be determined to get Floyd Rosedale back to Iowa City. I have a hard time seeing. I think Minnesota will probably play them tough early on, but it's one of those things where if Iowa, you know, is able to go for the kill right away, and when they see it and take advantage, whether it's, you know, a big play by Marvin McNutt or a big play by Marcus Coker, or the defense creating a turnover, I think that could be that snowball effect that you've talked about. And I think this game is going to be too much Iowa, and I think this is a game that, frankly, they need to look impressive in, because you're looking at the month of November, all four of the opponents that they have remaining at this moment are above 500. So to beat a team that you should beat and to do it impressively, and not to mention, too, this is a road game. They haven't won a road game in nearly a full calendar year. So to get that monkey off their back, if you will, I think is important. And I just think this is a game that the guys, they know that they need to play impressive here. They need to get that sting from last year out of them, and I think they're going to be able to do it. So I'm going to say Iowa wins 38-16. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. Again, a reminder, if you are interested in becoming a subscriber to HawkeyeDrive.com, we offer a 3-day free trial. We also have subscription rates of monthly $9.99 a month, yearly $89.99 a year. Payments are recurring. Chris, thank you again for joining us this week. For Chris Rowell, I'm Brendan Stiles signing off.